cliffcentral.com.
Maybe I'm just in love when you wake me up. Or maybe I'm just in love when you wake me up. 'Cause maybe I fell in love when you woke me up.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
Cliffcentral.com.
That was Ed Sheeran before he was famous, Michael. Entertaining us and educating us at the same time. So yeah, Gareth's away until, well, the rest of this week, the whole of next week. So if you want to have various songs be played, you know, the cat's away, as mice shall play kind of thing. So if you want other things, let us know.
Yeah.
Give us your requests.
We're going to have like a request line going on now.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, sure. Let's go old school in that. We're not doing shout outs though.
No.
That did die with the 90s, so I'll be very clear on that.
Nobody cares.
Okay, but before we get into news, I have to tell you, it is here. YCon 2016, the most coveted youth marketing conference of the year. Student Village, in partnership with Cliff Central and Biz Community, will be connecting youth and brands with an exclusive all-day masterclass 17th of March at the venue Melrose Arch, with an array of experts including Richard Mulholland, founder of The Missing Link, Cliff Central's Aria Kalman, Mike Stopforth, the CEO of Cerebra, Kuli Chana, Rafilo Ramakase, founders of Mufftown Heights, and international guest speakers Adebola Williams, founder of Red Media Africa. So if you want to be part of this star-studded event and very, very insightful, entertaining speakers, go to studentvillage.co.za/YCon, that's just the letter Y, for more information. And for your special Cliff Central discount, there's a booking code that you can use. It's YCON16CLIFF. That's YCON16CLIFF. Go to studentvillage.co.za/YCON. Enter that code YCON16CLIFF and you will get a discount. Afslag, call it what you will. So that's YCON 2016. This is where it's at. Isn't that right, Sia?
Okay, we won't judge you for that. What is that term you used? Afslag.
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 It's an Afrikaans discount.
Yeah, I left that in my high school days. Never mind, I don't know.
Right, well, now it's time for the news.
All right, let's begin with one of those stories that will have you saying, that karma thing really does exist.
Uh-oh.
A man believed to be part of a car theft syndicate was killed after he pulled a toy gun on a police patrol.
Yeah, you had to do that in America. Come on. Come on.
Ben, this happened right here at home in South Africa. In Durban, to be specific. Two others were arrested just before the fatal shootout with police in Glenwood. So, according to the K9 unit in Durban, three men were spotted trying to steal a vehicle. They then gave chase, and the suspects fled. One of them drew out a toy gun. He pointed it at the police officers, who then responded by fatally shooting him.
Gosh.
Now, pardon my judgment here. But if you are going to pull a toy gun and point it at someone, wouldn't you point it at somebody who you know for a fact does not have a real gun themselves?
Yeah, maybe not the best time for this, is it?
Two other men in the car, aged 29 and 35, were arrested. And upon recovering the vehicle that these three were trying to give chase in, police found a navy blue bag with a car computer boxes, which are also used to override car electronic systems and car break-in tools. So again, you know, just one of those stories that will have you going, oh, well, you know, if you're an idiot, bad things happen to you.
Yeah, and you can't blame the cops because essentially they're defending themselves. And secondly, this guy could be a dangerous criminal.
Exactly. And, you know, they were discovered trying to hijack a vehicle. So we know that at the very least, they're criminals involved in very shady behavior.
And you would think, I mean, you can get a real gun if you're a criminal, right? Very bad criminal.
I know. I mean, you almost tempted to say, oh, what a considerate criminal. At least he was using a toy gun and not a real gun. But you don't point a toy gun at a police officer. He has the real deal. So everybody just get their ish together.
Yeah, don't have toy guns either. Just get sporting paraphernalia. You'll live a better life. Less chance of being shot by cops.
Now, I mentioned a couple of days ago the incident about a student who is studying in America at a flight school, but he is originally from Egypt. And he went on to Facebook to say that he would happily kill Donald Trump. And then he got arrested.
Firstly, hang on a second.
Look, I can't remember what his exact post
Someone
was.
From Egypt is allowed into a flight school in America. Can you imagine that entrance process?
Yes, yes. And then he goes onto his Facebook page to say, I would happily kill Donald Trump, and I think a lot of people, you know, would thank me for it. And then he was arrested, and the American government said, well, actually, we are threatening to have you deported. And back here at home, there is a second university that has joined the University of Pretoria in saying that university students who post messages that are deemed hate speech and could incite violence risk being criminally prosecuted. Now, UP said, you know, we'll have you expelled. But now the University of the Northwest, that's NWU, they've become the second higher education institution after UP to warn workers and students that they will actually be criminally prosecuted. So we need to take this thing of expressing our thoughts and views on social media seriously, because seemingly tertiary institutions, your own place of employment, they are not going to put up with whatever nonsense that you feel you want to rant about on your Twitter page or your Facebook page.
Good.
Subsequently, this Egyptian flight student who was arrested has now opted to leave of his own will, because basically America were not going to give him much of a choice. They said, listen, we are going to have you deported. Immigration authorities will now allow Emaldeddin El Sayed to return home voluntarily instead of deporting him. And he's expected to leave the country in July.
Yeah, you don't want people leaving America disgruntled after making death threats, huh? They generally go to that part of the world and, well, let's just say things happen.
Okay, Ben, I sense a bit of prejudice in that statement
nah,
that you made.
Really.
Which is exactly what his lawyer said. When he was pleading his case to an immigration judge. Now, his lawyer is Hani Bushra. And
Hani Bushra.
Yeah, I thought it was Hani Boo Boo there for a second.
No, it's Hani Bushra. Now, he basically stated the case that his client is being discriminated against because he is Muslim and he is a Middle Easterner. All right. He's being detained, I think, primarily because of these reasons, his lawyer said. He is currently being held at a Southern California jail. This kid is going to become a poster boy for hating America, according to his legal representation. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested El Sayed at his Los Angeles area flight school on the 12th of February. And this was 8 days after the Secret Service interviewed him about his posts on the Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump. Interestingly enough, it was the very flight school where he is studying that alerted authorities of his Facebook page.
Hmm.
They then swooped in, they arrested him, they've had him detained since. They basically gave him no option, and he has now opted to leave the United States willingly.
But you got to ask yourself the question, are we so obsessed with likes and being funny on Facebook and social media, or showing some sort of social self-worth, that you want to run the risk of this happening to you? Like, when did it get to this?
More importantly, I wonder how many times you've attempted to put something on Twitter or on Facebook, and mm-hmm. then before you posted it, you thought to yourself, oh, actually, hang on, I don't know how this may go. And then you decided to delete it instead.
You see, the problem is not a lot of people think that way, and they still will post some stupid, stupid stuff.
And then they end up getting into trouble.
Exactly. That's when you need Hani Bushra on your side.
See, I think Hani Bushra, yeah.
Yeah, Hani.
He must
Hani
have
Bushra.
A sticker before you tweet, get to Bushra. Because he'll be the guy going, nah, that's a cuck idea.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Aye, aye, aye. All right, so you guys, I just have a quick question. When you think of the 60s, what do you associate that time period with?
Well,
hippies.
Yeah.
Like bright wigs and sort of that dancing with your hands.
Wasn't that? When was the disco the era?
Yeah, disco era.
Yeah, that's 60s, okay, 70s. That's 70s. Yeah. But clearly the 60s also have lack of contraception, because I don't know whether you guys have heard about this. An 87-year-old former postman has been proven as a father of over... I don't know whether to believe this or not, but you know what? Maybe let's just go with it. 1,300 illegitimate children. Mm-mm. After a private investigator hired by a Tennessee family over in the States discovered the shocking truth. So basically, this investigation started when it was over a 15-year period that basically proves that this man is a father to literally thousands of children in the region. So he says he hasn't been named yet because they're trying to keep his identity a secret there. He says contraception wasn't very popular in those days. I've nothing to be ashamed of. The 60s were the good old days, and I did a great Johnny Cash impression, which played out real good with the ladies. So some even thought I was Johnny Cash for real. I don't know if they really believed it or if they were trying to convince themselves, but who was I to say no to a quickie? And so that is when you get an 87-year-old who was all over the place as a postman as a father of over 1,300
kids. Sorry, he was a postman.
Yeah.
So every time he delivered the mail, he would deliver something else to the wife at the home where he was delivering the mail.
It's that weird porno situation.
If this story is true, what it shows is that this is probably the most fertile man in the world. Because essentially it means that every time that his seed was released into a woman, it hit the egg and a pregnancy ensued every time that he did it.
This just basically also means that there's a father out there who has a child he's raised as his own, and probably the wife is lying. So this all started back in 2001, when two different men in Tennessee had nothing to do with each other, but they hired the same investigator to find their biological father. So it was very astounding and shocking to find out that through further investigation that they both originated from the same person. So that's when this mystery started unraveling and became like this personal mission of the investigator to find out. So basically, whenever he had free time, he'd try and track down other testimonies. And so eventually DNA testing became really, really cheap and easy to use, and helped him gather a lot of information in the latest years. So as it currently stands, the 87-year-old man is not going to be sued or charged of anything. Nobody actually intends to pursue any lawsuit against the man. But it's odd, hey? Yeah.
It's also kind of disgusting, because it just goes to show how gross human beings are, going around having unprotected sex with each other. You know what I mean?
But like, it was that heyday.
I know, I get it, but I'm just saying, like, over 1,300 children. Ugh.
Well, this sort of sounds like the movie Delivery Man.
What is the movie about?
Where the guy's a sperm donor.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, obviously, now if you're a sperm donor, you can obviously maybe create that many kids through various things from donating a sperm, but this guy's actually physically on the job.
I'd hate to be him when they start asking for child support.
Well, that's just said, you know, did you say there's a Johnny Cash impersonation?
No, you guys, okay, hold up. Does this make sense in a mathematical way?
No.
So 365 days a year, you work on average 5 days a week. What's that math? 5 times 52, right? So that's a...
Maybe
there were orgies involved where you got multiple women at once.
Yeah, you see, if you do start doing the math, I don't know that it is possible to have produced...
Back of the mail truck.
Over 1,300 children.
See, now what's even worse now is he's 87 and he's at that age where you really don't care.
Yeah.
So he's saying like, 60s, no contraception, they liked me, I was Johnny Cash vibe. So he really doesn't care about all these kids.
Well, you should do a tribute concert. You can do his Johnny Cash impersonation, rent out an arena, and all these little offspring can come in there.
Yeah, he can sell.
It'll be the strangest moment in humankind.
Oh, man, how creepy.
What up, children?
So are these... Oh, gosh, yeah, no. It's just... Ugh.
Yep, that's the world we live in.
Well, from thousands of illegitimate children to your dad trying to actually auction you off as a bride.
Oh.
In America, yeah. It's in a Christian magazine.
Right.
This dad, okay, he's way too involved in his daughter's love life and that kind of stuff. He's a bit creepy, and his daughter's a virgin. I think she's 26. And he actually put in an advert saying, my daughter is looking for a husband.
I saw a promo to a TV show on one of the channels the other day about parents who are arranging marriages for their children. But this is in the United States, and you know, traditionally, they're not the kind of country where they have that kind of custom happening.
Yeah.
So again, it's a set of parents getting involved, hooking up their children, and then hopefully marrying them off. And the children don't really get to have a say in this thing, apart from being questioned by their parents in terms of, well, what do you want in this partner? What should he be like? What should they earn? That kind of thing. Mm. And then the parents basically take over the show, and then they hook their children up.
That's weird, hey? I can understand when parents have kids, they want nothing but the best for them. So they try to push them into certain professions, or they try to make them into sports stars. But I think it gets a bit creepy when it's like, okay, well, we need to find you someone to marry.
Yeah.
But what made this kind of particular story kind of creepy is that, firstly, the daughter had no idea about the ad.
Oh, no.
Secondly, the ad was put in the job section. So the job of son-in-law was essentially what it was what the ad was about.
Oh dear. That's a parent completely overstepping their boundaries right there.
Just back on the guy with the thousands of kids, Hugo saying on WeChat that he couldn't have banged 5 times a day. But
He
could have.
Hugo says.
Sorry, that's a bit far away.
Yeah, but I mean, even if he did, who in the world is that fertile that every time that they're having sex with someone, they impregnate the person? Every single time you got someone pregnant. I mean, must be a science, some kind of science miracle then if he's that fertile.
Well, whatever it is, his diet must be put into recipe books for guys looking to get a bun in the oven.
Yeah.
This guy's diet was probably just LSD and mushrooms.
Exactly, in the 60s.
And the odd bit of yogurt maybe, and that was him.
That's completely plausible. A couple of days ago, Ben, you were telling us, or you played us a clip about these guys who went onto the streets and read people Hitler quotes and passed them off as Donald Trump sayings. Oh, yeah. Now, apparently, Donald Trump is and has been compared to Hitler quite a lot, with people saying that he is very Hitler-like or showing Hitler tendencies. So he's decided to now address these criticisms of a new practice at his rallies that has been compared to the Heil salute from Nazi Germany. Very recently, Donald Trump has started asking voters to raise their right hand and pledge support to him, creating an image that some have argued evokes the rise of Adolf Hitler, particularly when coupled with his sharp rhetoric towards minority groups such as Mexicans, the blacks, and the Muslims. So, Hitler comparisons are not a new thing for Trump. Comedian Louis C.K., in a postscript to a Saturday email about the latest episode of his web series called Horace and Pete, he asked fans and readers to please stop it with voting for Trump. He said, "It was funny for a little while, but the guy is Hitler. And by that, I mean that we are being Germany back in the 1930s. Former Mexican president Vicente Fox said last month that Donald Trump reminds him of Hitler. Anne Frank's stepsister, okay?
Whoa.
Yes, Anne Frank, the famous Anne Frank. Her stepsister, in a January essay to mark the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, she accused Trump of acting like another Hitler. Before that, former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman had said that Donald Trump's plan to halt the immigration of Muslims into the U.S. reminded her of the kind of rhetoric that allowed Hitler to move forward. But I mean, knowing Donald Trump, these things don't faze him at all, because, you know, if you've listened to a lot of the things that he says, he thinks that he's the greatest. And quite frankly, his response to these Hitler accusations is, "I don't know about the Hitler comparison. I hadn't heard that, but that is a terrible comparison." That's all he has to say on the matter.
He's not fazed.
I don't think anything can phase this guy.
You see, I'm now at a point with this whole Trump thing, because at first none of us could believe that he was actually running for president. But now when you look at the results, and kind of seems like he really is heading that way, and come November we could be calling him President Trump. But do you still, like, what do you think his intentions are? Do you think his intentions are really, from a very weird way that we may not understand, is in his way to make America great, or is it just like a power trip that he's on?
I reckon he'll, if he wins, right, he'll get into the Oval Office and he'll absolutely shit himself. he'll go, oh my God. No way. Now what? Because all this bullshit is one big act, right? This is kind of his life.
Yeah.
Because he knows that politics is about just hot air and all that kind of stuff he's really good at. But can you imagine him getting sworn in and suddenly he breaks into a cold sweat and he actually soils himself out of just fear? It's like, oh my God, I'm actually the president. So I think that's going to happen.
I still think he's just in the middle of, like, not a power trip, but it's a very egotistical thing.
Oh, no, it's completely egotistical. Yeah, sure. And I don't believe that it has anything to do with the fact that he wants to be a political leader. For him, it's about the fact that, imagine if I became president of this country. I think I can do that. Let's go out and do it. But yeah, once he does do it, it will be interesting to see how he takes to the job.
And whether he just sees us as like another notch in his belt, basically.
Basically, it's all about his ego. Speaking of egos, let's talk about O.J. Simpson for a second.
And they found more knives.
No, they haven't found more knives, and I'm yet to hear if there are any results on the DNA testing that they're conducting on that knife. You'll remember the knife was apparently discovered by a construction worker 4 years after they demolished OJ's home. The construction worker handed it over to some police officer who thought, hey, nice souvenir from the OJ Simpson house, kept it, and then now it's suddenly resurfaced. But in amidst everything that's happening with also the TV show that's currently playing on Fox, O.J. Simpson's former manager has now felt the need to, you know, make himself relevant and to gain some attention. So he said that he knows who murdered Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman back in 1994. But then he adds, I just can't disclose it right now.
Why then?
Well, what he meant was, I can't disclose it until a big newspaper or magazine gives me a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly.
This is
why I say it's all about getting attention. Really, as human beings, we're pretty pathetic when it comes to this thing. We all just seem to want to, you know, have our 5 minutes in the spotlight and to get people looking at us and talking about us. So apparently, this guy Norman Pardo has gone and given an interview where he says that he knows, he and O.J. Simpson, he says he know, they both know who killed these two. It wasn't O.J., but they can't disclose that information right now.
They probably don't want like a spoiler alert for their TV show series that's going about O.J.'s life.
No. What spoiler alert?
Of who actually killed her.
But he was acquitted of the crime and they never charged anybody else, so there is no spoiler alert in the actual show.
But think about how he can sort of hold on to this information and sell it for money.
No, I don't think you can. I mean,
otherwise, why would
unless
you just
unless
say?
you sold it to a sleazy tabloid, but
you can just say tabloid.
Okay, well, it's
encapsulate sleazy as it is.
It's kind of redundant to call tabloid
sleazy. Can't
these
two somehow be charged or forced to reveal the information? Or has the case actually been like closed legally?
The case, as far as I understand, the case was never closed, which is why they say that they're conducting DNA tests on this knife, is because technically the case is still an open case. But O.J. Simpson can never be charged for the same crime ever again.
Yeah, that whole double jeopardy thing.
Yes.
But then with that said, can't the policeman who held onto the knife also be legally somehow...
If it was found that he somehow...
Isn't withholding information from the law bad?
I think if anybody, you know, if anybody felt the need to bring charges against a police officer, which I'm yet to hear anybody has done that,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure they could find a charge to take him on, like obstructing the ends of justice or something like that, because this is still an ongoing case.
Exactly. Oh, well.
But I mean, you know, now you've got this idiot manager of O.J. Simpson, who, by the way, is still in prison. Because, you know, I was a little bit, confused there as to where about O.J. Simpson is. But he is serving out a prison sentence for an unrelated robbery conviction.
Do you think he gets to watch his series on Fox?
Gosh.
He's totally doing that.
Yeah.
Does he get, like, TV time?
If he does, I can imagine, like... On that weeknight, they all get together and the other inmates sit around him and they're like, yeah.
That is so horrible.
Yeah, it's completely horrible.
Here's something a lot of parents can possibly wish happens when they go to their kids' school. So imagine you know, you get invited to a child's school and it's during the week and you probably just don't want to go and you're like, ugh, is this really worth it? And the stage, there's a stage set up, curtains open, and then you hear this.
We love you!
Where am I right now?
So some schools may do some, you know, bake sales for fundraisers. Well, this school in LA had Beyonce perform.
a school?
A school in Los Angeles had Beyonce perform. And that's basically because also when you're a cool mother like Beyonce and your kid goes to the school and you find out that the school's trying to raise funds, you go, yeah, sure.
Oh, I'll perform. It's her daughter's school.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. See, that maketh the sense.
So now that just makes every other bake sale seem so null and void and boring. So it was an anniversary gala for the Center of Early Education, the private West Hollywood school that a four-year-old daughter, Blue Ivy, attends. The gala raised money for financial aid at the school and also went to basically shine a spotlight on the head of the school, Ravita Bowers, who was basically also retiring at the evening as well. So just imagine, as a woman who's been working, I think she's worked there like for 44 years or something, and now you have Beyonce sing, do a cover of Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, and also her own single, Crazy in Love. I mean, what else do you need as you retire?
It's so thoughtful that she didn't sing Single Ladies or all the other crap that she's had.
What was she wearing at the school? Because, you know, no, traditionally, Beyonce's
act, shows a lot of thigh.
Yeah.
Her act is very, you know, it's kind of explicit.
Yeah.
And if this was at a four-year-old child's school, I'm just wondering what she was wearing.
No exception. There's like a little short gold dress. It's glittery, a lot of hair. It's Beyonce at the end of the day. But I'm just like, how cooler can you get?
Sorry, short dress, a lot of hair.
Yeah, that's like the Beyonce equation. Okay, wait. No. Short dress. Oh, I get it.
Not that kind.
Not hair there. It's bushy Diana Ross hair.
Yeah.
You guys are so sick sometimes, really.
I'm not the sick one. I had nothing to do with
this. Yeah, I might be. So I might as well just bring another sick story to the mix. What do you reckon is a good tip if you got like decent service percentage-wise?
Isn't the rule... Is it 10% or is it 20%?
I always go for 10%. Easiest to work out on a bill. You just move the comma.
No, incorrect. It's a blowjob.
Oh, no.
In Denny's, okay, in America, this woman was so overwhelmed by the waiter's service that she dropped to her knees and insisted that she gave him a blowjob.
Okay.
Yep.
This must be in America.
It is America, yeah. It's like Denny's is like, you go for like a family restaurant, it's like a kind of like a spur in this country's equivalent, I guess.
But I mean, was she hugely impressed by the service or by the menu? Because then you should give the chef a blowjob.
Yeah, it seems like he gave her the tip.
Yeah, well done, Michael. That's a good ending line. Like, I think she went there wanting to give away to a blowjob for cameras. So anyway, this guy got fired. So,
why was he fired?
Well, no,
you know, you don't accept.
He can't do things like this.
I mean, you're representing an establishment.
You're representing an establishment, exactly, Babs. That's exactly what they said. You can't just drop trowel and have some woman gobble you off after dinner. So basically, Denny's spokesperson came out with this and said, "We are very disturbed by the inappropriate and offensive behavior of the server that was in the video." So the video went online. Everyone saw it was inside a Denny's.
Oh.
And here's a waiter getting a blowjob just really like right next to the table.
Oh my word. Yeah. So they didn't even go discreetly.
No, it's next to the table.
So with other diners there sitting and watching?
It looked like a quiet night. I think that Denny's got bigger problems than just this one way to getting a blowjob.
Oh my gosh.
His actions were inexcusable, and as such, we've immediately terminated and he no longer works at Denny's. A family dining restaurant, Denny's does not tolerate this type of behavior, and we deeply apologize to anyone who was offended.
Waiters everywhere, though, are like doing a slow clap, like, yeah.
But can you imagine
that's what they're hoping for?
But can you imagine like being like just two girls out on a girls' night out, and this guy's serving your table too, and you've just seen that, then he comes over to you and goes, "Would you like the bill?" Whoa, buddy! No. It's not like that here. You'll get 10% if you're lucky.
There will be no tip for you, Mister. People are strange. People are weird.
Hey, you know what? Rather that than pulling swans out of the lake, I will say that.
Yeah, That, well, I'd agree with you.
I just saw the images of this event that took place with the blowjob. It's legit done at the table inside the restaurant. He just pulls down his pants. She gets on her knees and gives him a blowjob next to the table.
But are there other people sitting around them?
The friends sitting across. You can't see anyone really.
It looks pretty quiet.
Jeepers. Okay, then.
Look, it's either a big story or Denny's PR has really gone left field.
Yeah exactly. So, yesterday, American rapper Mos Def appeared briefly in court, right?
Of course, yeah, because he's been stranded for a couple of months now in Cape Town.
Yes, that whole thing about him having overstayed his allocated time here in South Africa, and then him saying, no, he's got a world passport, and then South Africa saying, we don't recognize that document, blah, blah, blah. So, he had his big court appearance yesterday. This was in the Bellville Magistrates Court on charges of presenting a world passport when trying to fly out of the country. So there was a little bit of an incident when the 42-year-old arrived and was turned away from the court because he refused to remove his turban that he was wearing.
Oh, gosh.
Does he practice Islam? Because, you know, his name is, what's his name? Dante Terrell. But then he decided to get another name, Yasin Bey.
Yeah.
As the rapper, he's most deaf. I mean, he's kind of got a number of names. So he arrives at the court yesterday in a turban. They say, nope, can't let you in. You have to take that off. He refuses. They're like, nope. So he goes away, comes back wearing a scarf instead, draped over his head and shoulders. And basically the conclusion from that was that prosecutors requested a 2-week postponement of the hearing. He will remain free on bail of 5,000 rand until his next hearing, which will be on the 24th of March. And he was not required to speak. Now, here's an interesting thing on how our visa laws are about to change. Foreigners who stay longer in the country than their visa allows will face a much harsher sanctions under a new immigration law, which lawyers say is punitive and unconstitutional. The current law just fines foreigners who outstay their visas, right? So they just hand down a fine and they say, okay, pay this and then you must go. Now, an amendment to the Immigration Act, which was gazetted in December last year and is due to be fast-tracked to become law, proposes that a person who overstays their visit to the country, even by one day, cannot get a visa to re-enter South Africa and also cannot apply for a residence permit to live here. They could also be banned for up to 5 years, and appealing any decision can take up to 18 months. And the sanction applies to first-time offenders as well. So it seems like, South Africa is trying to be really strict in terms of letting people in and out of the country and supposedly protecting our borders and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very friendly, does it?
No, it doesn't. But then when you talk to the officials, you know, their response is, but we're just trying to match our standard to international standards, to a country like the US, like the UK.
That whole unabridged birth certificate thing,
yeah.
I mean, it was about the fact of just matching international standards. It's just that ours weren't on that level.
Yes.
So, look, in theory, you can't say it's wrong. It just sounds quite hardcore because obviously you get a lot of negative press around stuff like this.
Mm.
And we're so reliant on tourism with our small businesses in this country.
Yeah, we are.
So if you're a small enterprise in tourism and you read this, you're thinking, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Can these guys just cut us a break? Can they make us sound slightly more appealing? But you know, what do you reckon is a better punishment, though? For every day that you spend over your visa, you got to do a day of community service? There's stuff like that.
Hmm.
Most deaf should be teaching kids things, you know, painting stuff.
Well, he is a creative. He could. He has a lot of knowledge that he could share.
It's the irony. He overstays welcome, so therefore we had to stay even longer.
Yes, I mean,
And now it's 2-week postponement.
Exactly.
All now because the guy's cry was he stayed too long.
He stayed too long.
And then he
long.
Had this stupid world passport.
Yeah,
thing.
This world passport that we just don't recognize.
Do we know what he was actually doing here? Like,
he was living here. He was basically living in the country. He's going around doing comedy. I remember Nina Hasty talking about it. She bumped into him, I think, in Cape
Town.
Yeah, he's a comedian as well. She bumped into him, I think it was in Cape Town. I can't remember where exactly she said, but she bumped into him on a street while she went out for a cigarette outside a comedy club. She tried to talk to him, but he completely, like, you know, he left. He was like, I'm not interested. I'm a star. So he's going around doing comedy skits at different comedy clubs, But yeah, him and his wife, and I don't know if the children, they were living here. They were like, we're here.
And immigration was like, no, you're not.
No, you're not. Please go. But actually stay, and now stay a longer 2 weeks because your case has been postponed, which is what happened yesterday.
Well, maybe everything was fine until Nina ratted him out after being snubbed in the street. Like, hello, immigration? Yeah, this guy, I know he's here illegally. Yeah. I know it.
Wow. All right. So, you guys, there is a woman in the UK who has expressed that she loves shopping so much to the point where when she dies, she wants her ashes sprinkled in her local shopping center.
But then somebody is just going to need to sweep up that ash and then throw it in the dustbin. So what does she want to end up in the dustbin?
She says, you know what? It's a great final resting place. That she's 52 years old because she says, at least I know my children will come and visit me.
No, they will not, because you will have been swept up by whoever is cleaning and then you will end up in the dustbin, lady.
You know, this actually begs a weird question. There are some people who have had very, very odd requests for what must happen with them once they're dead. So this man named Frederick B-A-U-R, Bur, Bar,
B-A-U-R.
I assume bar. Well, anyway, we all know him actually as the creator of the tubular shape of the Pringles can. So he invented that. And after he died, he wanted to be placed in that. And hey, people actually respected his wishes. And then some more famous, very, very odd occasions of what must happen when you actually die. Rapper Tupac, we all know him. We all know as a rapper, he was very, very fond of weed. So he says, hey, you know what? Why not take some of my ashes? And he passed it around to all of his friends. And
No. No, they did not smoke Tupac.
He was mixed in with marijuana and he was smoked. Yeah, one of those things.
And that'll do interesting things to the lungs. Carry
on. If you think that's bad, Rolling Stones rocker Keith Richards at 72 now, actually back in 2002 when his father passed away, took some of his dad's ashes, mixed it with cocaine, and snorted them.
Hmm.
So let's respect people and what they actually want to do.
No. Was he already high when he decided to snort his father? Because I suspect that this is precisely the problem when people are making these decisions.
Wow. I don't know. It's just weird. It's weird. You know, I understand some other wholesome things, like this Marvel comic book editor, Mark Grundevold. He died in 1996, and he asked that his ashes be mixed in with the ink that goes out to publish the comics. And so, you know, it's like a legacy almost.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I think it's kind of creepy if you're on the receiving end where you're buying a comic and there's someone's ashes. But hey, to each his own.
Okay, I'm just going to brave it and say that it's actually stupid.
Yeah.
Because like after you're dead, what do you care about what happens after you're dead because you're no longer there?
It's that whole legacy ego thing.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Again, it's about your ego.
So then if you had it your way, would you
Care what happens to me after I die.
But would you stop people, for example, putting their ashes in oceans and you still have to get into that?
No.
You don't mind that?
There's a whole lot of stuff that ends up in oceans anyway. Like a whole lot of stuff. I'm not worried about somebody's ashes also being part of that mix.
But to smoke up your friend.
No, you see, that's
or
just...
Or to snort your father's ashes.
I suspect that he was already high when he made that decision.
That is weird.
He was probably sitting there already, had snorted in a few lines, looked at the urn above the fireplace and was like, Dad. And then he thought, And then decided to mix him with his next line. Snorted him up and good to go.
Just sounds like a great idea. Not. Absolutely not.
Well, you know, if I had a lot of free time or inherited a huge amounts of money, I'd love to create a website of like, what do people actually think about? Just like, what the fuck people? Just think of
that
this.
That would be great.
It would be the greatest news source in the world because every now and again, it's so good just to laugh at ourselves like this.
And then you allow for...
you can't make this shit up. You really can't.
You allow for people to be able to put posts on this website in terms of what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Now imagine all the high people getting onto your website and just jotting down their thoughts. Even if it's just out of curiosity for them to go and read them the next morning when they've sobered up.
But isn't there like... there's actually a site... It's like, I think it's called High Times.
Uh-huh.
And it literally is just about high people and there's news about them. Or there's like something, I'm pretty sure, It was a few years ago. There was actually a site where stoners could just like ask questions, and the other stoners would log on. It'd be like, you know, why is a panda black and white, and you know, like just weird shit, and people would then they'd have these long conversations about things.
Yes. That kind of.
Anyway, sorry. High Times is just marijuana related news. It's a pretty, you know, credible.
Oh, it's an
publication.
Actual
news
publication.
But you see, that idea actually echoes on an app that exists. Well, not the High Times one, but just people putting random things and confessing random things. There's actually this app called Whisper. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of the app. I just can't remember what they do. And doesn't it delete whatever it is that you put up after a certain time?
Well, with Whisper, you could basically confess something.
Yeah.
And your profile remains anonymous, but people just get to read what it is.
So okay.
I just feel like, so clearly if you just need or want to get something off your chest, you just like send that through just for the sake of. So some person says, I go to church every Sunday, but no one knows, I shouldn't be laughing, but no one knows that I deal drugs to my friends and their friends.
At the church. He's a drug dealer, but he goes to church.
I'm going to a wedding and I've slept with all six of the groomsmen and the groom.
Yes. So it allows you to it's like a confession.
Yes.
You go into the booth with the priest. You do it anonymously and nobody will ever know that it is Sia who put up that post.
Yeah, but it's absolute random stuff.
I got some questions that high people asked, and some of them are actually pretty inquisitive. Someone that's high goes, "Bruh, is the S or the C silent in scent?" Another guy goes, "If you get out the shower clean, then how does your towel get dirty?" Another one, "Do you think sand is called sand because it's between the sea and land?"
Okay.
That's actually a good point.
"If money is the root of all evil, why do they ask for it in church?"
Okay.
That was someone who did not want to go to church that day.
That's funny.
Bro, just hit a blunt. Why are babies in the womb for 9 months but ain't 9 months old when they're born?
You can't question this reasoning, I gotta say.
Oh my god. Okay. Okay, yeah, we should actually stop.
Well, I suppose that's why they say it's a birthday.
Yeah.
Because you celebrate the day you were birthed. Anyway, just get through the messages quickly. You can still message us. We're getting into our third hour soon. We've got another interview with Gareth. Mike Mason says that he demands that his remains are used to fertilize a cabbage patch. The cabbage will be fed to a tortoise. One of those tortoises then lives for 250 years, and I'll outlive you all.
Okay. No,
that's pretty clever. That's pretty clever. Mm-hmm. Black Box thinks that asking, isn't Tupac the guy that Flax killed? Michael, I didn't realize you had some street cred.
No. Who asked that again?
Black Box.
Yeah, for like months now, he's been accusing me of killing Tupac.
What? Black Box has been quite vocal. So can you scroll down?
Where
Black
does
Box,
he get that from exactly?
I've never had anything against you, Black Box.
I think it came from a story once where I explained how P. Diddy was involved in Tupac's death, and then it was gang warfare, and then Black Box just came out, Flax killed Tupac.
And that's been his story that he's stuck
to. He's never been able to prove it, so just ignore that until he proves it.
And just getting back to our original story about the postman who always rang twice a day, if he impregnated one woman a day, per se, you could definitely have got that, because all these things took place over a huge amount of years. I mean, it's not like all these kids are the same age.
Yeah.
I got the best stoner question here of all time. Who closes the bus door after the bus driver gets off?
There's a
The bus
lever.
Driver has a separate door on his side.
Oh, so that answers that stoner question.
There's actually an app, Michael, you can probably find more. It's called Puff Puff Chat. It's an anonymous stoner app where basically everyone can just go and have anonymous chat with other stoners. A couple more messages here. Cypher does bring a decent point up here. It said, "Ask Sia how things are going with the inevitable stalking of the ballet dancer that we had recently, Leroy."
Okay, see,
Interviewed by Gareth on the 1st of March. Sia, any updates there?
Did you make a move?
I have like 3 points on that one. First one, why did you say that's like, what did you say? It's a reasonable question.
I don't know, sir. Let's not look at semantics here.
Did you make a move on you?
Secondly, the dude was like 12 years old, you guys.
Well, that was my first thing. Sorry for giving, come on. I know, Sia, the other day, Sia said something to me that was rather upsetting. So obviously, I'm going to tell you what it was. Yes, yeah. He said anything after 12 is lunch. But the thing is, I don't think he was talking about nutrition.
Oh, gosh.
I went to an all-boys school. That's what we were taught.
Okay. Oh, Sia, why you get messages like this, because of your anything after lunch is 12 kind of thing. Mm. A couple of song requests. You're welcome to get them in. We'll play them while Gareth is away. And keep messages coming. I think that covers them. Sorry, my eyes are quite bad. Mubs, you got any more stories before we wrap up the news?
Yeah, you know, why not? Let's talk about one of Gareth's favorite topics, which is pastors, you know, reverends, church leaders, that kind of thing. And in this country, we have seen a number of strange things that have been done by pastors. Everything from being made a congregation to eat grass, to walking on them, literally stepping on them, to making them drink petrol. And now, courtesy of a Pietermaritzburg pastor, he has claimed that he performed a miracle and is an apostle of God after he allegedly poured boiling water on himself and members of this church. I like this pastor because at least he also involves himself in whatever he's making the congregation to do, because a lot of these other guys will just make the congregation do the things. Eat the rat, eat the grass, drink the petrol. This pastor, he's considerate. Whatever the congregation does, he does too. According to his Facebook profile, Pastor Tamsanqa Sambulo, who is just 23 years old, is the founder and apostle of Thy Word Kingdom Harvest Ministries. Now, the Facebook page went into detail into the story of how the pastor performed this miracle. He started by instructing a member of his church to go and boil some water in a kettle in the kitchen. He then allegedly took the kettle after it had boiled and hugged it. He basically put the kettle on his chest. The congregation was in shock as they shouted, "No!" Some couldn't even look. It was that shocking. He then asked, "Who has faith here?" One by one, the congregation came and did exactly what the apostle did. They all took a turn, holding the kettle to their chest after it had just boiled. He then re-boiled the water. As he was doing this, one woman came up to him and said, "Papa, I have faith. Pour it on my hand, as hot as it is." The Son of God first poured the water on himself, then poured it onto this lady, and both of them were completely fine. The rest of the congregation then, one by one, followed, as they also wanted to test their faith. Now, nobody actually saw this happen. This has been detailed in his Facebook post. Okay.
Wow.
But this is what happens in people's lives, okay? They get boiling water poured onto them, and they are completely fine.
That is when I'd have to take a rain check on the church service. Like, "Oh, sorry, time for lunch, gotta go." Like,
sorry, I've got that thing, pastor. I've got that thing, you know, I've gotta go.
But you know, like these pastors, it becomes quite addictive, because if one guy is playing with snakes, drinking petrol, or putting boiling water on, the next guy goes, "Shit, you know, I gotta kind of think of something."
It's kind of like competitive.
It's kind of like magicians, you know. Like, well, that guy disappeared. You made that woman levitate. I've got to do something. I'm gonna swallow a sword or something.
You've constantly got to up your game. Yeah.
I'm sensing a really bad like Anchorman kind of movie. It's just called Pastors, and you get these guys who are really competitive, and they're all coming up with different things, and they compare notes. What they're going to do next, what they're going to get the congregation to do next.
Yeah.
No, like, yeah.
All right, Sia. Just quickly let us know this interview with Gareth, who we chatted to today.
Okay, so this is Andile Ngube. This is, you know, what Gareth has been doing is getting people to come in at, you know, different times, and then he sits down with them and chats to them. And then we bring you the interview in the last half hour of the show, just so you know, you get a little reminder of Gareth's voice, which is part of the reason why you love this show. And so this is the interview that we'll be bringing with you to you after 8 o'clock. He, among many other things that he's done, hosted X Factor South Africa. So Andile Ngube coming up after 8.
Fantastic. Yeah, Gareth's away, if you haven't noticed. He'll be back a week after the next, but we're holding down the fort. And if you do want to interact with the interviews, just on the app, you can still tweet through to us if anything you want to bring up. You know, we will always get to your questions, your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams. So keep interacting.
Right. You're, preach,
Pastor Ben. We're taking requests, yes. And we're being motivational and inspirational.
All of those things. We're here for you. We're here for you now. So yeah, into the final hour in our interview. See what we got next on our playlist.
Well, let me not take a lot of credit. Let's see what the reaction is to this song. Let's just go straight into it.
Okay, if you have been putting requests through to us this morning, it is being noted and we'll just bleed them out.
Okay.
So keep them coming. Cliffcentral.com.